Today on the Fozcast, we're here at Carrington again. We are talking to Nick Cox, Director of Academies here at Carrington. We spoke about how exactly he maximises a young player's potential, what it looks like, that pathway from academy into the first team, the loan system, how that works, the fine system, and the very special, secret special gift every academy graduate gets given.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Up the Fozcast. Nick, welcome to the Fozcast. I've got to start with last night. Manchester United played Wigan in the FA Cup. It was the 249th Manchester United Academy graduate to make his first team debut. Talk to me about that player in question and how proud are you? Is it almost like, you know, like your kid's first day at school and you sort of like push him off through the gates and go, have a good day and do well, I'm proud of you?
It's exactly that. So you've arrived at the right time. 249. Like a debut is a big day for the player, in particular. Last night, Omari Forson, been with us since I think he was about 15. It's a landmark moment that we definitely celebrate. Deep down, we know that there's still a lot of work to be done, and a debut doesn't necessarily mean a career, but it's a start point. So it's a big moment for staff to celebrate, for players to celebrate. But definitely the feeling when I was watching on the TV last night rather than being there, there's a sense of pride, but there's a sense of nervousness and a sense of excitement. It's exactly that. It's like watching kids, watching young people that you've seen grow over a period of time, go and do something.
Did you know he was going to get on the pitch? Do you have to wait and see how the game goes? Say if like Man United are 4-5-0 up or something, do you think, come on, just chuck him on, please, just chuck him on?
So obviously we're aware he was in the squad, and he's had a few opportunities to be in the squad in recent months. Knew he was going to be in the squad last night. So without knowing that he's definitely going to get on the pitch, you've got a good sense, without being disrespectful to Wigan, a good sense that if we can put the game to bed, then there's a chance of some debuts here. So I was watching last night, willing the old, can we get to 3 or 4 so we might get some kids on. So we got there. We saw the game out comfortably, didn't we? 2-0. And you've got a sense that he's going to come on. But you don't know until the camera pans to him kind of on the touchline, getting ready. And that's the point at which your phone goes crazy and all the staff are messaging each other. Because it's a big moment for everyone. There'll be a landlady that's been looking after him, and there'll be a driver that's been picking him up and dropping them off to school, and school teachers and coaches and all those people will get a little ripple of, we helped
a little bit,
we did our bit. And so this morning when you come in, there's a...
It like this morning then when you come in? So are you really wary of the emotions that player's going through? Do you know what I mean? He's probably had the biggest thing that's ever happened to him in his life happen just hours before. When he arrives into training this morning or tomorrow morning, is there certain steps you have to take? Is it just straight away just giving him a hug? What?
Yeah, so we'll acknowledge it, but ultimately he reports for first team training and he's got to get on with business. So we've got to kind of promote that type of Manchester United attitude, haven't we? Which is, great, well done, we're delighted for you. What's next?
Oh, really?
You've got to go and get on with the job. And Kobbie Mainoo, when he made his full debut in the Premier League just a few months ago, very much the same. He walked in, everyone's pleased, everyone's smiling, shake hands, high fives. You've got to get on with it now because like, a debut is really important. But we talked to the boys about, you know, if you can get to 50 games... you might be able to call it your job. If you can get to 100 games, right, this might be your career. There's a lot that can happen between 1 and 100. So much as, you know, since the boys are really little, they'll have been dreaming about the day that they put a red shirt on and debut. It's kind of actually the beginning of a new journey. rather than completing the journey, isn't it? It's like you finish a chapter, it's right, this is going
to
be tough.
That's the Man United mentality, right? Is on to the next. We did a podcast recently with Andros Townsend, and he said, I think when he made his debut at Spurs in an FA Cup game, he scored, got man of the match, didn't play again for the rest of the season.
Was loaned out, wasn't he? I think the very next day or
something like that. Yeah. And he said it was kind of humbling and going, right, that's just, like you said, that's a tick, little box ticked.
So a messaging that we use around here all the time is about how the journey is rarely linear. It's really rare to see people go in a straight line to success. Young players that are the best player all the way through a programme, make debuts. It does happen, but it's once in a generation. It is Marcus Rashford or it is Wayne Rooney. The typical journeys are kind of, they twist and turn. There's setbacks, there's failures, there's a debut, there's a loan period. You get in the team, you don't get in the team, you pick up an injury. We talk to the boys all the time that, like, don't ever expect the industry to settle down. What you've got to do is you've got to find a way of rolling with the punches. You've got to find a way of staying constant, knowing that everything around you is going to be a little bit crazy. Typically, boys that have been the best players in academy programs probably haven't experienced not being picked, not having good games, not being the best player on the pitch. Part of our job is to try and create that environment along the way, show them challenge, show them struggle. But actually, there's nothing that quite prepares you for what it's going to be like
and how
you get in that squad.
How then do you help those younger players? You know, like I said, I think I've got a theory that all footballers that make it to a professional level have always been the best player in their team. Always. I'm talking from 7 years old, messing about with their mates and playing Sunday league football. They've always been that best player, haven't they? They've always been the one that scores the goals, faster, quicker, bigger than everybody else. Always getting told that they're the best. Oh, you're such a good player. You're such a good player. Like I say, never getting dropped. And then when they finally make it up the ranks, they make it up the ranks and they make it into an academy team and they're not the first pick. They're not the starter. Is that where somebody has a job role designated to them to almost sort of, it's the mental health side of it, I suppose, really, is where you have to put an arm around them and say that this is how it works. This is how it happens to try and make them understand it.
So my approach is probably a little bit different. Manchester United's approach is a little bit different. I think from the outside looking in, people would assume what we're going to do is pick the best players. Now, obviously, we try and recruit the highest potential players into the programme in the first place. But people would then assume that what I do on a weekly basis is at every age group, pick the best team, try and win every competition, try and, you know, lift trophies.
Just win at all costs. Win at all costs.
That's the perception, and there'll be maybe potentially lots of grassroots teams out there that function in that way. That's not our job. Ah. I don't get any recognition for winning things as teams. I've got to help individuals reach their full potential. So I'm duty bound to make sure that all of the boys get lots and lots of exposure on the pitch. There's no point signing for academy and being the substitute for 3 years and then getting released. That would be pointless. If we're going to offer a boy an opportunity to be here and they're going to make some commitments in terms of being here 3 or 4 times a week and their parents are going to drive big distances and put petrol in the car and bring all the other kids with them to training, well, what we need to do is give them a proper education. Mm. This is like a school. We're trying to educate players. The game, the match day, is just a vehicle to teach players about the game. So we've got to make sure everybody plays, but the really important one is I've got to make sure that everyone feels a little bit of struggle. I've got to put kids in really difficult situations.
Resilience.
Yeah, yeah. So slowly you build resilience by showing young players tough environments. So when I say tough, we're safe and we're never going to put kids in danger, but they've got to regularly try things that are difficult, regularly experience failure. I'm sure through your career, your best learning would have come when things went wrong.
Yeah.
So I've got to make sure that skillfully over time, I can put boys in environments where they go, oh, that was a bit difficult. Ah, right, I know what I need to get better on now because under pressure against the best players, I can't quite do X or, you know, when I go and play in the big tournaments, Y lets me down and I need to go and refine that. So we're regularly trying to put the boys in a world where they feel a bit of struggle, but then mix it up with opportunities for them to express themselves.
And can you see that in certain players? Can you see their different makeup, their different mental makeup of, you just know that some people are going to take to it like a duck to water. You know that as soon as you expose them into that first team, or it could be making their debut for the under 16, 17, 19, whatever it is, do you see it in them straight away where you think, I just know he's going to be all right? Whereas with others, you have to sort of just get a taste, then bring it back, then taste, and then just slowly build it up.
Yeah, every player's different, and that's the That's the importance of making sure that this program is about individuals and not teams. Each of our players is going to need a different type of support. Some kids might be psychologically really strong, need some help with their techniques. Other kids might be incredibly athletic. We need to, I don't know, work on their resilience. Some kids, you know, everybody needs something slightly different. So the art is having brilliant coaches that can kind of stand back, assess boys, strengths. We talk about the strengths all the time here. It's about, let's talk about what the players can do rather than what they can't. But sometimes we might just have to brush up on the bits of their game that might stop them from expressing their strength. So we've got to have skillful coaches that can work out each little player as a little puzzle and a package, and then carefully put stuff in place that's going to help support them.
You say that about the kind of strengths. I've done a little bit of reading recently about strengths and areas to develop. Mm-hmm. And is it fair to say the United approach, if somebody shows world-class ability at mm-hmm. one thing, why focus all your time on trying to get the area they're not so good at up?
Yeah.
Just surely make it competent or good enough.
Yeah.
And then you go, no, what you're really good at,
that
world-class level, that's what you're going to do on a pitch. Because very few players are everything on a pitch. It's only the Stephen Gerrards, the Wayne Rooneys of the world that have got everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the players don't have to be perfect to have top careers. You need an outstanding quality. So every one of our players has got to have something that might get them picked by the manager when they're 17, 18, 19, 20. What is it you do? Do you stop goals, score goals, make goals? Are you a dribbler? Are you mega competitive? Are you just really consistent? You've got to have a thing that is your thing that might get you picked. But we spend most of our time, how do we make your strengths world class? And how do we just brush up on your weaknesses so that they don't hold you back in terms of expressing who you are? So we talk, I use a phrase all the time, push strengths, hide weaknesses. That's what we've got to do with each other. How do we push their strengths and hide their weaknesses? And again, I think what we're brilliant at here, and always have been, not just in my time here, like seeing individuals for what they are and celebrating that kind of individual difference and letting kids express themselves in terms of who they are rather than trying to turn them into
something
what we want them to be.
Yeah.
And again, this club's been amazing over the years. It's been really patient with the late developers that like Tom Cleverley would be an amazing example, right? He had a program for him that they knew that he had unbelievable character. They knew that he had great techniques. So there was a period of time where he just needed that nurturing and help. He might have to play down an age group, might have to just select him for the games where we knew he could cope. This is obviously before my time, obviously.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I was at Watford when he came on loan, and I'm obviously many of the staff that are here now talk about his time so I can piece it all together. But there had to be like a really bespoke plan for Tom to make sure that when he got his man's body, he was ready to go.
And I'm sure that goes for everybody else then, doesn't it, as well? I saw, we were speaking before we started the podcast, by the way, that 249 Academy graduates now have made their debut for the Manchester United first team. That accounts for about half of all players that have played for Manchester United have come through the Academy. That's just mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, I'm always clear to point out that they're not my stats, they are the club stats. Yeah. Like, I don't own those. There's loads of great work on over 90 years of youth development at this football club. So it's 249 debuts. That's half of all the players ever to play. We've gone 86 years with a youth product in a matchday squad without breaking that cycle.
Wow.
And I think in the modern day, we're the most productive in terms of players playing across the leagues in the country.
Do you know what would be an interesting stat to see, actually, is how many players that have come through an academy system at Manchester United actually went on to have a career in football? Because, we were talking about Tom Cleverley a minute ago there, and I just searched up the youth team that Tom Cleverley was in, for example, and straight away, I'm looking at a picture of this team here, Tom, and So you've got Ryan Shawcross, you've got Craig Cathcart, David Gray, who played a little bit, played up in Scotland, Darren Gibson, Fraser Campbell, Fabian Brandy, played for a bit, Ron Robert Zieler, goalkeeper, mm-hmm. who went and was third choice goalkeeper for Germany at the World Cup when they won it. That's just one youth team. And there are quite literally, you know, there's hundreds of them sort of youth teams at Manchester United where players, yeah, sure, they might have made one or two appearances for Manchester United, but they went on to make a full-on career from football as well.
Yeah, it's astounding. And as I say, that all of those statistics and looking at all that track record of players, the most amazing thing about it is it's not forced, it's not fabricated. We haven't deliberately tried to manufacture like 2-4-9 debuts. We haven't tried to manufacture one player in every squad. The manager wasn't even aware of it, I don't think, until it happened. In fact, all the staff weren't aware. It was actually a supporter that worked it out. An amazing kind of wow. historian supporter, I think, called Tony Park, kind of was looking at squads and thought he'd onto something here, I might be able to work this out. He worked it out and presented it to the club. And that's what makes it powerful, is all of this is just what we do.
Yeah.
It's just how this
you,
place
you haven't
functions.
Tried to force it. It's not just forced. Naturally happened.
It's not manufactured. Yeah. It's not a PR stunt. It's just like, this is just how it's unfolded over 90-odd years of working with local players. To yeah. try
but
and help
you
them
say it's not
thirsty.
Manufactured, but the manufacturing process of the academy is phenomenal. So one thing we were going to say move on to, which was those players that didn't make it in mm-hmm. the first team and have mm-hmm. 20, 30 appearances, 100 appearances. They go elsewhere, like Ben said, and they're playing up and down the country, week in, week out. Every team off camera we mentioned, there's always a United graduate on
is.
Either team somewhere.
Yeah, there is.
And actually, Ben, we talked about it when you've been at Watford, West Brom over the years, and you have United players come out. One thing they're known for is they set standards, yeah. right? So mm-hmm. look, Tom Cleverley, again, we use Tom as an example, but Tom sets standards yeah. wherever he goes, yeah. wherever he went, didn't he? And now he's on this kind of coaching programme, elite yeah. coaching programme of players that have played for England that are going into coaching.
Is that something that United instill? So players that go out on loan, for example, like Man United have always had a fairly close affiliation with certain clubs, Watford being one of them, where they will, it's kind of like a given that they will loan them a player like once a season or something like that. But every time that Manchester United player arrives, it's almost like they know how to be a professional better than some of the other lads in the team because it's instilled in them from this football club.
Well, it's a nice compliment. I think Troy Deeney might have said it on this yeah. this show, actually, yeah. didn't he? He talked about the young, I think when he was playing
James
at Birmingham.
Hannibal at Birmingham.
So they were his words, that when United boys walk in the dressing room, there's a sense of, oh, right, I get it. There's a United player there by the way they conduct themselves, by the way they introduce themselves, and by the way they behave throughout the period of the loan, which is an amazing compliment to us. I guess what we're trying to do here is not only produce good footballers, but produce good people.
Yeah.
So we want them to be humble and grounded, and we want them to be disciplined, and we want them to have a load of skills that are primarily going to help them be a great footballer. I think all of those, you know, personal qualities give you a better chance
yeah,
of being a good
doubt,
footballer.
Yeah, yeah.
But they also are going to set young people up for adult life, right? The amount of boys that have been through this programme that come back and talk about the jobs that they're now doing away from football, and they'll talk to us about, well, I reckon I'm good at my job because I know how to be on time, I know how to
yeah,
be disciplined,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know how to hold myself, I've got manners, and so that's a nice spin-off. It's a nice kind of, the fact that it prepares you for a life away from football is great, but definitely the way, and we're not, how do we do it? Well, it's in our everyday behaviours. So if we go on tour, we make sure that, like, staff are in blazers and the kids look immaculate. And I guess you might, those things might be seen as a little bit old school, but we just see them as understanding how to represent an organisation.
Yeah, can I say something on that quickly? But when I was at United, when obviously it was Sir Alex Ferguson, so standards were, it was, that was the bare minimum, genuinely. Just hitting the standards was the bare minimum. I remember we used to, if we would play away and we would fly, then we would get on the plane and you would get changed almost instantly the second you got onto your plane. So you arrive, you're in your suit, you've got your tie on, everything's done. I'm talking top button done up. You don't even dare not have your top button done up. Tie to the top, perfect. You look immaculate. You got your shoes on, shined, everything. The second you get on the plane, you would take your suit off, put it into its hanger, hang it all up nicely. Everybody's all labelled up nicely, perfect. you would get into leisure wear, shorts, T-shirt, everything like that. It might be a 3-hour flight, it might be a 6-hour flight, no matter what it was. Within half an hour of landing, it would be, right, lads, everybody back into your suits, get dressed again. You get off that plane looking exactly the same as what you looked when you got on it 6 hours previous. And that would be it. It would be that, oh, Man United are in town. And it carried so much weight. I promise you, it carried so much weight.
The blazer is, it's a small detail, but it seems to ripple through every environment that we go to. People talk about the kids in the blazers with the United crest on. It's not a difficult thing to do, but it seems to impress people. More importantly for us than it being about standards and discipline, it's actually a tribute to everyone who's worn the blazer before. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we'll get into this, but our youth program's got real strong connections to how this football club survived the war. So we came back from the war because we had a youth program and young players. We survived Munich because of young players. Mm. We've won European Cups because of young players. And actually, there's a real pride in everyone who's ever pulled on a Man United blazer with the crest on. So we make a big deal about presenting the blazer to the boys when they sign their first full-time contracts with us. And we explain to them what it means, what the privilege it is. So it's, yeah, it's about standards and discipline, but it's also about respecting and understanding everything that came
so
before that, you.
So you when they sign them, you will give them a blazer.
That's beautiful.
That's a lovely touch that is. And when you said about the players going on loan, Ben, and you know, and you said about, is this something that is worked on with the coaches within your team where you'll say, small things. You walk in a room, you shake someone's hand, look them in the eye.
Yeah.
Are these little personal touches something that you actively work on with young players?
Yeah, but not necessarily in a way that they would know we're actively working on them. So it's all within the environment. We're not sitting down having classes and elocution lessons, and it's not formal. It's just really informal. So the boys just know that they might. We're lucky here, aren't we? That because we're a global football club, we have great opportunities to take our boys around the world to play in amazing tournaments, and we've got resource. All right. So the fact we've got some resource and we're in the spotlight allows us to show boys opportunities that are probably going to prepare them for adult life more so than at any other club. So if we're going on tour with the under-10s, there'll be subtle things we throughout that week through the likes of some of the long-standing staff that have been here, through Tony Whelans and Dave Bushell and Eamon Mulvey's, who've been here for collectively, whatever, 150 years. There'll be things we through that week designed just to educate boys about this is how it is. So it might be presenting the hotel staff at the end of the trip with a Man United pennant, but it's one of the kids that makes the speech says thank you. And that those kids will be nervous because it's like, oh my goodness, I've got to speak in front of everyone at the hotel and I'm nervous. But like that, just slowly, before you know it, is what it feels like to do your first TV appearance when you've made your debut for the first team. So we're just throwing bits in like that along the way. And it's really deliberate, but it feels informal. So
it's kind of, and it's a question I did actually have for you, is the initiation thing then still a thing? Because it's a smaller form or a similar form of when that player gets into his first team or he travels with the first team for the first time, when you're at dinner and you hear that dreaded clink, 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 and that young player knows what's coming and he has to get up and do a speech or a song. Is that still happening? I hope it is. Please tell me that's still happening.
It might look different. There will be staff and players now that are singing on as part of their initiation on their first trips, on their first involvement with the squads. I listened to the likes of Darren Fletcher, talks about what initiations might have been like, and you hear some of the stories. It's probably changed a bit. It's probably a modern version of an initiation, but absolutely.
And the Christmas panto, the Manchester United famous Christmas panto. I remember.
Tell us what it is then, man.
So basically, every year it was something that happened every year, and it was a fairly big deal, you know, that on the Christmas Day dinner. So it would be probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 days before Christmas. The whole squad, the first team, the youth team reserves, all the staff would sit down in the canteen, would all have Christmas Day dinner, like I say, 3 or 4 days prior to the big day. But the youth team would put on a pantomime for everybody to watch. And it would be very Man United themed. It would be it's taking the piss out of some players, basically, and it's brilliant. And but they had to put some proper work into it. I'm talking weeks in advance of this day, they would have to put some proper work. I'm talking props. I'm talking a proper script. There'd be roles like allocated to everybody, and it was a big deal. But it was just, again, it was another thing that was done properly and everybody appreciated. And yeah, it was a laugh, but everybody got a big old round of applause at the end of, yeah, well done, brilliant.
I'm going to disappoint you. That doesn't happen anymore.
No!
It is like a legend of the place.
Yeah.
Everyone still talks about it. So I know some of the things that went on and some of the young lads that had to be part of it talk fondly about it. Because what does that represent for us? Like, this football club is the biggest football club in the world.
Yeah.
It's a global brand. But actually, once you get through the doors, it's just an intimate, tight family. And I think that the contrast between those two things is what makes this place exceptional. Some football clubs are huge global brands. Some football clubs are intimate families.
Yeah.
Watford was an intimate family when we were there. But to be both is difficult. And I think that we are that. There's a sense of togetherness. There's a sense of community. There's a sense of relationships with this place long after you leave. I think people, you know, you leave, but you always know that you can come back. This is always your home. I think we talked to the boys about United once, United forever. It's like, once you've been a part of this place, like, that's a relationship that is going to be there for forever.
I think that's something that probably gets portrayed in the media quite a lot as well, is that I think United gets portrayed as it's a bit faceless, a bit soulless. Behind the scenes, it's all kind of either robots or people just out for what they can get. But I think if you actually, once you're in it, you realise that, no, it is. It's like, say, Kath's still working on reception in the main building. Yeah. She's been there for 50-odd years. Do you know what I mean? She is that first face you see when you walk through the building. And that's the bit that I think people don't actually respect for Manchester United. They think it's just a big organisation now, don't they?
It's a hard place to arrive to. You'll know that, because the standards are high and everyone is excellent. So therefore, on arrival, you've got to prove that you are good enough to be here. But my experience and observing the arrival of many staff and players in recent years is, once you have arrived and once you know that you're the real deal, it is a community. It's intimate. It's probably, as you say, not quite how it might be perceived from the outside. It's a really tight-knit
what group is of people. Sorry, Nick, I've got to cut you. It just made me think of something, though. What is the biggest predictor of a player making as a footballer? Is it talent or is it hard work? Which one will win through in the end?
Hard work, character. So I think I've worked with loads of players over the years that have gone on to achieve good stuff in senior football. They've all been different. They've all had different qualities and skills. But the one thing they had in common would be character. That's closely connected to hard work. So you're looking for kids. You've got to have an intrinsic love of the game. You've got to be obsessed and in love with the game. You've got to love learning. You've got to be going after. You've got to be really curious about, how do I get better? How do I improve? You've got to have some kind of warrior spirit. You've got to show some resilience. And probably what comes out, if you've got all those things, what comes out of that then is hard work, commitment to the cause, and just, that is the biggest ingredient required, I think, to play at the top level.
And what about these who talk about the mentality and working with the players on it? Because we were talking on the way up about, like, grassroots football, and our lads are 14, got another one who's 10. And I'll see it on a Sunday morning when you'll see a player and you'll go, wow, we're going to lose 15-0 today.
He's just head and shoulders
above. And he's going to score 15 goals. Then something won't go their way and they're out the game. And it might be someone giving them a tough tackle, they might have missed a goal, something like that. And you just see them shrink. How important is it for your guys, your team, to work with them on this resilience? And how do you do this? So if they have a bad game, do you treat them differently? Will it be some of them, just character-based, will go, right, now come on and give them a bit of a kick up the backside, or the classic, you know, the cliche arm around the shoulder? Is it horses for courses and very much individual basis?
I think what you see last night, Amari Forson or Colby Maynou just before it, what you're seeing is kind of, not the finished article, but that's the kind of the first time our young players are in the public eye.
Yeah.
And I've just talked about how professional we need to be and how high the standards are, and, you know, how you have to be elite to survive here. But actually what you don't see is this general acceptance from us that young people make mistakes all the time, whether on the pitch or off the pitch. And so our environment is, I would say, probably more child-centred than most places would be. And we're expecting kids to make mistakes, get stuff wrong, be late for a meeting, accidentally wear the wrong kit, forget to bring their boots, not have a packed lunch. We're expecting all of that because that's just what kids do. So it doesn't look perfect along the way. We see kids making mistakes all the time on the pitch, and we actively kind of hunt down environments that are going to see them make mistakes, because that's where I believe learning takes place. What happens when you then get regular doses of little setbacks and loads of support to help you fix the problem in terms of a nice bit of feedback or a coach that you can talk to? And sometimes that might be a different approach. It might be, as you say, a little bit of placing demands on young people as well. But once that becomes normal and commonplace, actually that's what sees character evolve. That's what then means that players don't lose their heads when things go wrong. That means what players that's what means when a player struggles, it isn't catastrophic. He just goes, that's what happens. I've been here before. I've seen something that looks like it. And they can build on that mistake.
Will you have players that walk through the door that you see them at the grassroots, maybe they're hotheads or something, for example? Is that something where a club like Man United will look at them and say, we can work on that? And like we were saying earlier on, we're never going to have the calmest player in the world, but we'll get them. But look at Wayne Rooney, let's say, for example. Known as occasionally feisty. And you got to go, if you took that out of Wayne's game, he's a different player. So do you look at a player at Exeter and go, we'll bring him in, but we know we can work on him?
Absolutely. Yeah, our kids just look like, they're super talented, but they're just like every other kid you ever see running around a school playground. And we never lose sight of that. This is an environment here, I think, that is really tolerant of the fact that kids have got different personalities, kids will behave in different ways. They're all different in their approach to the way that they turn up here. Coming from really different backgrounds, by the way. Some will be arriving here on four buses and others will be turning up in a 4x4. So we've got to be really mindful of the context of each young player. Where are they arriving from? What were their experiences before they got here? Where are they at in their lives? Where are they at school? Where are they at in terms of their growth and maturation, what's going off in it? And we piece all that together to give context, which helps us to work with young players to try and see if we can support and help them reach their full potential. Now, there will be a time at which you've got to make a decision as to whether the player stays in the programme or not. But whilst a player is registered here, whilst we've given that opportunity to be here and they're showing the effort and the energy required, we're going to keep working. And our job is really to make sure that we give as many kids careers as possible. Utopia is a career here, a debut here, but actually we're duty bound to make sure that we help every player get to where they deserve to be. So if I look at the top end of our, and it's really different depending on the age of the player. Down the bottom, we are just having a laugh. We are, 9, 10, 11 year olds. It is creative and fun and expressive and loads of mistakes, and it looks like the school playground. But by the time we get to 17, 18, 19, it's got to feel more like the first team. So it's a little bit more ordered and disciplined and structured. At the top end, the pressure I put on our coaches is you better make sure that all of these boys end up where their potential says that they should be, right? Yeah, if we get to the point with a young player where we go, don't think you're going to play in our first team, we don't just give up with them. It's, where do we think your skills can take you? Well, I think you could be a 500 games in the Championship or 500 games in League One. Well, how are we going to get you there? What are we going to do to support you? So we have to have boys walking out of this building with their own version of success, a debut, playing in the Championship. The quality of players in League One, League Two is phenomenal. It's really, really difficult. I don't think people realise how hard the industry is. I think people strive, and our kids should strive and dream to want to play in Champions League finals and World Cup finals, and some of them will, and I'm never going to deny them that kind of opportunity to dream. But at the same time, you've got to be really realistic about how many people there are trying to be footballers and how high the level really is. It's dead easy for people to turn up and watch a game of football and go, he's rubbish, I could do better than that.
Yeah, John and Chris on Twitter, though, said he's shit, yeah, so he has to be shit, all right? It's the way that it goes, that's not, surely.
League One, League Two, the Conference now as well.
Oh, the level.
They are phenomenal players.
Athletes,
that have probably all
animals,
started in
yeah.
environments like this. Players are and the resilience required to smash out a 500-game career, you know, and survive from, I don't know, a two-year deal in Carlisle, and now I've got myself a two-year deal in Exeter. Come on, love, we're off.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
It's hard. It's resilient. And some of them won't be earning amazing money. They're superhuman. Absolutely superhuman to go and maintain
a
career like that. Absolutely. So we've got to prepare our kids for both, right?
Yeah. The loans, Nick, as well. So when you were at Wrexham, obviously in League Two, in National League, sorry, when you're in... You look at the team sheet every week. Bear in mind, I've been around the country watching Ben play with family and friends and stuff. There's a lot of names you notice on that team sheet, and you go, he was at Watford with Ben.
I remember him.
He was
I
at West Brom, and there was like young lads, I think, was the, one of the striker at York in National League, and he was scoring hat-tricks and scoring a load of goals. And you go, this is one player that's dropped down to the fifth tier, and he's had the upbringing in Premier League clubs and... That's the standard.
Yeah.
So it's almost like that Premier League, mate. It all filters down,
doesn't
it?
How important is that loan system? So for some of your young lads going out, and who's the person, basically, that gets the ultimate say on that player should go out on loan to that club?
Mm-hmm. And at what time?
All right. So different for every player, but loans are becoming really, really important because the Premier League is a destination league. Every player in the world wants to end up in the Premier League. So it's a really hard place to debut. And this club's a really hard place to establish yourself in the squad. So even after a debut, you not necessarily establish yourself in the squad. And there's a big gap between playing youth team football or under-21s football and playing in the Premier League. So we have to fill that gap somehow. And a loan is the most obvious way to do that. So it's a really important part of most players' journey. Dean Henderson would have had... five loans before he debuted. And
I think goalkeepers will loan a lot more, won't they?
So I'm big on the closer you play to the goal, the more chance, more likelihood it is that you're going to have to go out on loan.
Yeah.
Because those slots are, managers are less likely to want to debut someone close to the goal.
So you need reliability at the back, basically.
And then this is, at either end of the goal.
Absolutely. So wide players and centre forwards, probably you're going to debut a little bit younger than centre halves and goalkeepers.
See, we get a rough deal, Nick.
You have to wait longer, right? But your careers go on that bit longer as well. So it evens out in the end. And even your best kind of central players probably debut out wide. Darren Fletcher debuted as a wide midfielder. Always knew that he wanted to be a central midfielder, but he debuted out wide. So it's just a bit safer to debut in those areas than it is here. So you tend to find those might be the ones that go on loan. But also there can be a number of other reasons about who's under contract above you that might be...
A bit of politics or something like that.
Can't get past someone, so we've got to put you out to bring you back. So this is where it becomes a little bit collaborative. So... certain players might be already on the first team radar, and that's a bit of a combination of obviously the manager with some kind of final opinion on the timing of a loan, me and Darren Fletcher trying to think about where the players are going to go on loan, a little bit younger before they hit the first team squad. That's a little bit more of a straightforward decision because we're not trying to think about whether he needs to support the needs of the first team. So that will be me. And then influential staff here, 21's coach Travis Binion, 18's coach Adam Lawrence, a loans program manager in Les Parry, so a dedicated team that are going to look after the boys once they're out on loan. So there's no kind of rigid process or familiar process that you go through to put a player out on loan. It will look different for everybody. Some players won't need one. Others might need four or five. Others are going on loan to prepare them for our first team. Some are going on loan to prepare them for... a life away from here. What we've done in recent years is what we call the pro experience. So before boys are ready for a loan, imagine if you've been here since you were nine. You've played on the best pitches. You've had
shiny everything.
Amazing kit. You've gone everywhere on nice cut. And we try and make it as humble and as simple as possible and deliberately pick. Can you put us on the crap coach rather than the good coach? We want to keep the kids reasonably kind of in touch with the real world while they're here. But if you've had 10 years of that, you don't actually know what the real world of football looks like.
Sure.
And you're definitely in your journey going to have to walk into a new dressing room, and that's a hard thing, first day at a new club. So when boys are kind of 17, 18 here, before they're ready for a loan, we'll send them off for a week to go and train with someone else's first team. So we've got loads of friendly clubs around the country, but we'll make them find their own way there. We'll make them go and do a week.
What sort of league, what are we talking team? About here? Like League Two, or it could be non-league, it could be anything.
What have we done? We've done Sheffield Wednesday, Forest Green, Preston, Barrow. We're looking for the right environments to put your young players. So that's probably more so on a loan, but you want to know, right, what does this young person need to improve upon? What environment might they need to improve that area of their game? So you're looking at a club's playing style, you're looking at their staff, you're looking at the league they're in and the trends of the league. So you might be putting players abroad rather than in this country, depending on what. So you're trying to find the perfect fit. But it doesn't always work like that, because actually trying to place a player on loan for the first time is really difficult, because managers don't necessarily want to give someone their first go. They'd rather give them the second or third go. So sometimes it's just we place a boy wherever we can, but we're striving for utopia, which is, can we find the right coaches, the right geographical location, the right playing style? But even then, it doesn't always go.
It's so
managers
tough,
get sacked a week in. And,
managers want experience, but how are players supposed to get experience if they're not? If people aren't willing to give them their chance?
It might be that they go have that first one at a national league, and then a league one, a champion. Yeah. But what does the care look like when they're at the club? So let's say they're at a League One club, for example. How do Man United keep their eye on the player? What does that look like?
So it's a careful balance, because part of the process of going on loan is standing on your own two feet and establishing yourself in someone else's culture, someone else's environment. So if we're all over it and we're trying to control every move, we're actually denying the player the opportunity to look after themselves, take ownership for their own development, and find a way of making that loan be successful. But it also, if we just left them for a whole window without any communication or contact, that would be pretty negligent of us as well. So we're trying to get that balance. So Les Parry and his team will be watching games regularly and having reports, and we'll have all the footage back and the clips and the highlights, so our coaches back at base can be seeing the football side of things. There'll be regular calls to consider all the off-pitch stuff. Are you eating properly? What's your accommodation like? How are you getting on? Might simply just be.
Are they sorting all that? Is a player sorting his own sort of, like, if he's staying in a hotel? Or because ideally you'd want them to like rent a place.
Yeah.
If it's a year's loan, for example, you'd want them to rent. You don't want them living out of a hotel, do you?
So our boys, when they go probably 18, 19, will help support them in that process of making sure that we've
got them set up.
And it also depends on the infrastructure of the club that you're arriving to. So if you're going to, I don't know, if you're arriving to Sheffield Wednesday, it's a different experience to Cambridge United, for example. So both wonderful clubs, by the way.
Barrow as well, wonderful club. I didn't mean to badmouth you,
by the way. Except now I've said Sheffield Wednesday.
A wonderful club.
I've just lost a load of friends at Sheffield United, but you know what I'm on about. All these clubs are doing brilliant jobs with the resource that they've got. Our job is just to try and fill the gaps and support where not every club is blessed with the same resource we've got. So if we can just help with a little bit of support in terms of, I don't know, it might be some clubs won't have access to a gym. So we might be getting gym memberships so the player can do extra sessions in the afternoon. But that's part of the process as well. Boys going on loan, coming back, and like, go on. So when they do the pro experience, we get them to present to us, what were your findings? And they're like, I cannot believe it. Like, we had to take a packed lunch and wash our own kit. It's like, that's the real world.
Imagine
it's
that.
Like, that is how it goes. That's what the majority, that's what 90% of footballers in this country are doing. So it's brilliant that you've experienced it, because that could well be you at some point on your journey. Or, I don't know, players that they're training in school premises, or they're training at the local leisure centres. There's no gym and they've got to go to the gym up the road. All of that, for me, is about an education for our players about what the football landscape looks like, because we don't know where the boys' journey is going to take them.
Yeah.
We need them to be really respectful and understanding of the realities of the football landscape. And we've got to prepare them, really, to be able to cope with whatever comes their way. they, whatever happens in their careers, we need to have made sure that they've seen something that looks like it before.
You've got such a lot to watch out for as well. Like each individual player, for example. So say you, like I say, you send our player out to Exeter for the season. You'll have somebody watching him. You'll have somebody liaising with the club, liaising with him, making sure everything's going all right. You're watching his performances on a Saturday afternoon. Is he eating well? Is he, like, sometimes when players, they leave their parent club, they're like, I can just go and live out of a hotel. They're eating Mackie D's for dinner every night. They start to put on a bit of weight and stuff. I've seen it myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you've got to watch out for their social media. You've got to watch out to see what they're getting up to. Like, I guarantee you there'll be a whole team of people here watching every single young player's social media, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all that kind of stuff.
Look what happens, Ben.
And looking at the story to see what they're up to.
Look what happens when a young player will, like Micah Richards here, burst on the scene.
Yeah.
But when a young player will come on, one of the first things that the media love to do is go, 2009, you tweeted that and that and that. And it happens so often, doesn't it? So it's like nicely onto the point of social media. There are good things about it. There are a lot of pitfalls about it. But how do you manage that? And how do you keep the lads' feet on the ground? Because it's different to when you were a young player, Ben. You didn't have that adoration on social media, did you?
It was barely even a thing when I was there. I think Rio and Wayne were about the first people to like get a Twitter account or something. But even that at that time, that's what I'm talking about with the standards. Alex Ferguson hated it. I mean, he despised it. The fact of even having a Twitter account or having a voice that you could put out there, no chance. That didn't fly very well whatsoever. So it must be so tough for you guys just thinking, please don't do something stupid.
They're going to.
So I think that's the first point, is that acceptance that over the years, kids haven't changed, right? So we use this saying, there's one thing that kids like less than rules, and that's no rules.
Yeah.
Kids will play on the fringes of the rules.
Yeah, give them an inch.
Because that's what they're designed, that's what every human instinct makes you want to push the boundaries and test the, you know, do these people really mean what they say? So whatever the avenue is for a young player to kind of express themselves in an individual, they will do. So it's social media at the moment. Would have been something different when you were a young player. There'd been another way of testing the boundaries. Mm. So like, I don't get too uptight or worried about it because I just accept that that's human nature. Young people will push the boundaries. Sometimes they'll cross the line and they'll need a little bit of education. But what we do is spend a lot of time trying to prepare the boys, make sure they've got the knowledge and the information about how to best use. Social media can be, well, you're a great example. Social media can be so powerful, right? And used in a correct way. And actually your platform as a footballer can be really powerful. We've seen that certainly in recent years through kind of the pandemic and all those things. Footballers' voices
Marcus Rashford travel in a long way. Yeah.
So I want boys to express themselves. You want young players to be the best version of themselves. So we try to educate them around, you'd have been media trained when you were here, but get kids in front of cameras and get them well-versed. In
Is that genuinely something you do? It's almost like a mocker, a press conference or mocker an interview after a game.
Again, we're lucky we've got MUTV, but we can get the crew to mock up a post-match interview and try and catch them out a little bit.
Nice.
And we're just trying to teach
them
how do you get your personality across,
but
how do you also represent the organisation at the same time. So there'll be lots of media training going on. We'll talk to them about how to use social media. We'll have workshops on the pitfalls of how you can accidentally get yourself. Like, we're trying to help our players. We don't ban kids from using social media because we don't like it. We're educating young kids about social media because we want them to be protected.
Yeah.
So it is really possible as a young player with a high profile to get yourself into a mess on social media by saying the wrong thing, or there may well be an unintended consequence of something that you put out there. So we'll educate the boys. We will try and help them to understand how to use social media appropriately. And that involves, workshops, but that will be the same for nutrition. That will be the same for driving, teaching kids about how to drive appropriately, particularly when you get your first contract and you can have a faster car than most 18-year-olds would. So we'll talk about
the
that.
Insurance on the cars nowadays. Oh my god!
So I think the thing that's come through for me, a big thing, is that you don't want to stifle the youngster's personality or character.
Yeah.
You want to give them the tools to make good decisions.
Yeah. And it's also not just our responsibility, right? So you talked at the beginning there about how do we keep people grounded and humble when the spotlight comes on them. Well, that's largely to do with their upbringing as well. That's largely to do with the influence of their mates. That's largely to do with the people they were hanging out with at school or teachers. It's like we are a part of their journey. We are not the sole influence on them. I think we're a powerful influence and a positive influence, but it's a collaboration, isn't it? There's all sorts of influences that will affect the way a young player behaves and the decisions they make.
One thing I wanted to speak about, because this is something that affects older players, Ben, potentially even retirement age players, is don't often hear it talked about, is homesickness.
Mm-hmm.
Is this must be a contender that you have on a daily basis, right?
Yeah, absolutely that. So boys that join us from outside the area are going to go and live in a host family, one of our family accommodation providers.
Digs are still a big thing.
Digs, absolutely, yeah. So, and deliberately so.
Yeah.
We like the boys to escape the training ground. We like them to go and be a normal person.
Live with a family.
So they'll be staying with families. Some of our families have been working with us for, 25 years or so. And those families are amazingly caring, but really highly skilled. Mm. You tend to find that they're former teachers and social workers, that they're not doing it for money. They're doing it for the satisfaction of supporting a young person to achieve great things. So the boys will be living in a community just around the corner from here, in a host family. We want them to be part of that family. They're not just going and hiding away in their bedroom. We want them to go and embrace being part of that family. But homesickness absolutely is something that we have faced on a regular basis. Like boys, for the first period of time when they come full-time here, they've got to live away from their families, we have to help them get through that. Now, that's where I'm really lucky, is that I've got staff that have been helping young boys to arrive here for years and years and years, and they've worked with hundreds of boys over the years.
And,
so.
And your staff must have had the odd call over the years, something like, how do I put the dishwasher on or something, or washing machine? There must be those tasks that they have to learn, right? Ben, what was it like for you when you were young?
Yeah, it's exactly the same as that. It's how do I do this? How do I do that? I wouldn't be ringing my club so everybody could expose me back at work or anything, but I might be ringing my mum or dad or something. But for sure, it's life skills, isn't it? You're not blessed with them until you learn.
It's like that pro experience you said is. It's double-edged, isn't it? Because it's a pro experience, but it's also a real life experience.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. And we will have boys that bring us up with some of the most outrageous questions about how do you do X, Y, and Z? Is it, can I turn the washing machine on? Or how do I book a train ticket? And it's great that they phone us, but our response is usually, I'm not doing it for you, but I will show you how to do it.
Yeah.
Right? That's education. Now, that might be a little bit different at first team level. If you arrive to one of the super clubs and you've gone there on a massive deal, their job is to remove all barriers so you're not putting any effort or energy into
anything other than
some of
the
things other than focusing on how do we win at the weekend. For me, it's a little different. Yeah. Like, we can't just go around solving the problems for the kids because they're never going to survive, stand on their own two feet. So our job is to say, absolutely, glad you phoned. I'll show you how to do it.
I'll be honest with you, Nick, I still think some of those basics still need implementing with first team players, and I genuinely do mean that. I think there's so many barriers removed that it's all too easy for some first team players anyway. We're coming to the end, Nick. This has been absolutely fantastic. I've got a couple more questions. I want to talk about goalkeepers in a second, but before we do players still get fined at an academy level? I'm talking professional academy level, so sort of 17 to 23s.
Yeah, absolutely. When boys are earning money, that is one of the tools that
Brilliant.
We might use.
That's so good to hear. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's for everything like being late for meetings, messy, something like that.
So I might have painted a picture here that this place is just a bit of a free-for-all. It's childlike and we want kids to express themselves, but we've still got standards and rules, and the players might have helped create those rules with us, but we've still got levels of discipline that need to be met. So you want to make sure your kids are on time, wearing the right kit. All of those things. And one of the methods of reminding players of how to conduct themselves might be to find them.
Nice little fine. I love that. And then quickly, before we go, I just want to know what the Modern goalkeeping nowadays is it's very much sort of you've got to be good with your feet. Everybody knows that now. It's a massive thing of we want to play out from the back. Is that something that Manchester United, when you're searching for a goalkeeper, you're scouting, you're working with the players that are here currently, is it something that is a bigger factor than what it ever used to be?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're trying to produce players for the modern game. So what will the game look like in 10 years time, 15 years, 20 years time? And that's the emerging trend, isn't it? So we've got to be really understanding of all the trends of the modern game, almost try and predict where the game might go to in the future. So naturally, when I started 20 years ago, we weren't focusing too much on the goalie's ability to play with his feet. It was how do you keep it out the net? Yeah. Now we're trying to educate and select players that might be comfortable playing with their feet. But I don't think you can ever lose sight of the fact that our goalie still needs
stop
to be able to catch it, stop it going in the net. You've got to be able to do both, right? But yeah, it's certainly changed, definitely.
I won't lie, I'm glad I was born in my era and not this era. I will not lie. Nick Cox, thank you so much. We really appreciate that. You shed so much light on
it was brilliant.
On
thank
what
you.
Goes on. It's incredible, yeah. And you're doing a fantastic job. And when that 250th United player gets through to the first team,
sooner
academy graduate.
Later,
I'm sure it will be sooner rather than later. Then all of you give yourself a good old pat on the back. You've done a fantastic job. Nick Cox, thank you so much. Up the Foscast.
Up the Foscast.
Cheers,
mate.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nick.
That's
really
great.
Cheers.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Foscast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Foscast.